Good morning and welcome back, chat. I'm Hugh Tewett and your co-host today, Danny Gittings. Danny, good morning to you.
Good morning.
We're talking about retirement today and a new plan from the administration. The Mortgage Corporation, Hong Kong Mortgage Corporation, has announced a life annuity scheme for those aged 65 or over. Under this voluntary scheme, a man investing $1 million, for example, would receive a monthly return of about $5,800 for the rest of his life, and subscribers could pay premiums ranging from from $50,000 to up to $1 million. The corporation says the scheme provides an additional financial planning option. What do you make of the idea? Do you think it's attractive? Do you think it's duplicating the insurance market? Do you think it's a poor substitute for a universal pension or a helpful alternative product? How does it compare and connect with the MPF? Email us with your thoughts. Our address, backchat@rthk.hk. Our Facebook page, Backchat on RTHK Radio 3. You can comment there or call us on 233 88266. After 9:20, we're talking about Carrie Lam's visit in Beijing. Joining us for our first discussion, we have with us Mo Pak Hung, Associate Professor in the Department of Economics at the School of Business at the Baptist University. David Webb, a shareholder activist, founder of website.com, and Lee Chuk Yan, Chairman of the Hong Kong Confederation of Trade Unions, and others, including Paul Yip, will be joining us later in the course of the programme. Professor Mo, good morning to you.
Yeah, good morning.
Thank you very much indeed. Nice to see you again. What do you think of the idea?
I think it's a good idea in the sense that it balances the cost and benefit of some retirement scheme. In the case of the universal retirement scheme, I think it involves some, we call this moral hazard. They're using other parties' money. So there's generally some inefficiency or resulting lower productivity. However, we need some scheme to reduce the risk of those retiree, as well as those who don't know when will die. So therefore, it substantially reduces the risk of some elderly and without substantial cost to society and to the government.
It's still a subsidized scheme, or at least because it's underwritten. I mean, the public sector is bearing the risks, essentially.
I think it is designed to have a balanced budget of the scheme. However, when there is some unexpected event that cannot be controlled, then the government will just pick up the risk. But on average, they are decided for the balance of the budget without a substantial cost to the government and society.
And it is filling a gap in Hong Kong. I mean, you look in Western countries, they have a lot of annuity products and so on. In Hong Kong, by comparison, they're very few.
I don't know the reason for such a situation. Probably the Western country are facing the problem much earlier than those Asian countries. So probably they have a much more mature financial product to match the demand of the society. But in the case of the Hong Kong situation is that I think the scheme is much higher, has a higher rate of return than a market product. And at the same time, probably the return, the rate of return, is about the nominal GDP of the Hong Kong projected, probably. Under that situation, the retiree can have some additional investment too, so that they can enjoy the prosperity or economic growth of the society, as well as hedge against the inflation risk in the society, in the economy. So therefore, I think it provides a very good option to those elderly who can have a peace of mind, as well as to even to their offspring. So that if you think the elderly is something, you just put $1 million or 15, depends on how much you have, and then your parent can get some annuity and without bordering you, you have to face the risk of taking care of your parent. Now you can just give it to the government.
Do you think that would work, that the Chinese cultural tradition of giving money to your parents, you can give a lump sum, how you feel, you give a lump sum and buy them an annuity instead of handing over money every month? In financial terms and in stability terms, it probably has advantages. In sort of practical, emotional terms, it's not quite the same, is it?
Well, even you give annuity to your parents, you still can give some pocket money.
Pocket money.
Yeah, if you have extra. Yeah. But otherwise, you have some basic amount that makes sure your parent, at least when they get old, and whenever your parent dies, you still get some money.
Okay, yeah, let's bring in free marketeer David Webb. David Webb, shareholder activist and founder of website.com in our Queensway studio. Good morning, Mr. Webb.
Good morning, Danny.
I'm guessing you don't like this.
Never prejudge the situation here.
However,
yes, it's interventionist. There are products out there already. I looked yesterday, and I'm not of the age that I need them yet. I probably won't, but... there are products available from life insurance companies, big ones in Hong Kong. I won't name them.
There's quite a good comparison actually in the South China Morning Post, just to advertise that paper today. I think on the page 5 or something like that, which does have comparison, by the way, of some of these.
Right. Okay. So they offer you various terms. I couldn't find one that gave me insured against unlimited longevity, because basically an annuity. Is a bet that you're going to live longer than average, and therefore you're going to get a better payoff than someone who snuffs it before they get into the extended part of the payback period. Because the government is saying that you're going to get a sequence of payments of equal amount that will add up to 105% of what you put in over 15 years, basically. If you live that long. But that's obviously, you know, an extra 5% on what you put in spread over 15 years. If you don't make it well into your 20th year, you won't get a reasonable rate of return on that investment because there'll be inflation along the way. And the government isn't offering an inflation-linked payment, which might be more attractive to people if they thought that they could also be insuring not just against their own longevity but also against inflation. They might want to rethink that because $5,800 today won't be the same spending power as $5,800 in 15 years' time. And annuity products, one of the issues they've been facing markets where they're quite popular or have been in the past is that because interest rates are at record lows, including long-term interest rates, the amount that you get back on a $1 million annuity is only $5,800, and it may go up in future if bond rates go back to where they were 10 years ago and they're at 5% rather than 2% for 10-year bonds, then the commercial providers and probably even the government will be offering higher rates of payout. But those who have already given the money to the government won't get a higher payout. They'll be locked into this low interest rate environment. So you should be very careful when these products become available and think hard about whether you really believe that inflation will remain low for a long period of time and the interest rates will remain low for a long time. But the real issue here is that the Mortgage Corporation is a government-owned entity and it's intervening in the private sector. And as Professor Moe said, he thinks that the rates they're offering are more attractive. I haven't seen the comparison table in the Morning Post, but
It's better. It's better in every respect.
So they're going to be crowding out the private sector.
Yeah. Yeah.
And why do they need to do that? Why do they not let the private sector function? Even the banks that they're hoping will distribute these products are also distributing other products.
You just said yourself when you looked that you couldn't find any private sector products that actually would pay out.
Not unlimited, Danny, but there are ones that there are ones.
Quite a crucial difference, isn't it?
No, because there are ones that take me to 105. And the probability of living beyond 105 is currently below 0.1% for the average 65-year-old.
I'm sure you sort of thrive on statistics and you sort of you take faith in those. But there'll be many people who just want the assurance that there will continue to be a payout until they die. I mean, they may realistically realise that's likely to be before 105.
Don't forget,
but they want to be sure that if they did live longer, the money wouldn't suddenly stop when they're that old.
It won't, because of course. We do have the social safety net, which provides similar levels of support. I mean, $5,800 a month is roughly what you can get as an old person claiming all the benefits you can get from the government. So if you run out of money and have the good fortune to live 105 and are still aware that you're 105 and haven't lost your brain, then you'll be able to enjoy the support of the taxpayer through the social welfare system. So, it's not as if you're going to face complete loss of income streams. I suspect the government is going to find that if they are competing unfairly against the market and offering better returns, they're going to be inundated with demand. They've only allocated $10 billion of quota for this,
but,
and
know,
$1 million per person. People will want more.
People want the government to be unfair about this. This is the complaint.
Well, people want a free lunch,
This is the problem with the MPF, isn't it? You're using private companies to do this. If the government had organised that and backed the MPF schemes and said you can't lose money and had played a bigger part, people would be a lot happier with the MPF, surely. And that's kind of a lesson they've learned here.
It depends on whether they would have to pay higher taxes to support that extra payout, Hugh, because if you ask people, would you be okay with a salaries tax rate of 30% and bringing down the personal allowances so that more people pay it? In return, the government will provide you a universal pension. And let's hope that there is enough taxable profit that hasn't been shifted away to China, which only pays 25% corporate tax. You know, there's an assumption, even if you want the government to raise taxes.
When you say, how would you like to pay 30% tax?
Well, no, it's not free money. It doesn't come, the government is not some kind of, benevolent, endless stream of money that comes out of nowhere. It doesn't grow on trees. It comes out of taxpayers' pockets. So,
but from what we see from opinion polls and the way people vote in elections, most people in Hong Kong would like the government to get involved in these things than you would.
And isn't that this a kind of compromise?
Which is a reflection of the probably of the income distributions and wealth distributions in Hong Kong. The majority of people would benefit from taxing if they could.
You're a great believer in democracy and universal suffrage, David Webb. I mean, if that's the majority,
I'm a great believer in free markets and incentives to better oneself as much as possible. We can go back to central planning, communist style. It's been tried from 1949 to 1979 in China.
What the government's proposing here is quite a long way away from central planning,
but what you're arguing for is more intervention and more redistribution, and I'm just saying that doesn't generally work. It didn't work in the Soviet Union or China or Cuba or Venezuela or anywhere else that's tried it. So you actually need to preserve as much as possible free market incentive, including the incentive to run insurance companies and sell annuities rather than crowd them out.
I think it's a bit extreme to start talking about central planning when we're talking about a government-backed annuity scheme.
Would you like government-backed supermarkets as well? I mean, there's a general consensus that supermarkets are too expensive. Perhaps the government should set one up and start competing with the two big ones. I mean, is that the solution to the cartel problem? I don't think so. Do you want the government to start supplying petrol as well or cement or any of it, break into the other cartels that way? I don't think that's the solution to breaking up cartels. I don't think there is a cartel in insurance. I think there's a fair amount of competition, and it's relatively easy for new entrants to get into that market. There might be a reason why they're not offering unlimited longevity, just in case we solve mortality, extend our telomeres indefinitely, so the only risk of death is if you get squashed irrevocably on the street. It may be the case that the insurance authority or the commissioner currently is warning insurers not to give unlimited annuities because of that just contingent tail risk that medical science will give us 200-year life expectancies.
There you go. It's worth a punt then, isn't it?
But the interesting thing about annuities, of course, is that the government is betting on your death.
Okay? Yeah.
They are saying, please die sooner so we don't have to pay out beyond the first 105%. And of course, the government also provides your health care through the hospital authority. So you might have a sort of do not resuscitate label on people with annuities in the hospitals.
Okay.
And by the way, you asked how this connects with the MPF. Okay. You asked how this connects with the MPF. Well, of course, it does. It gives you an option to take your lump sum.
Yeah.
And not squander it at Happy Valley, but instead buy an annuity. And how does it connect? Well, the chairman of the mortgage corporation is married to the managing director of the MPF, Diana Chan. So they must have a lot to talk about.
That's tidy.
Thank you, David Webb. A lot to cheer over there. Okay, let's bring in the third of our guests, Lee Chiat Yan. Lee Chiat Yan's former legislator in the Labour Party and the chair of the Hong Kong Confederation of Trade Unions. Mr. Lee, good morning. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning.
What do you make of this proposal from the government for the annuity scheme?
Firstly, it's really for those who have more savings. Elderly population in Hong Kong, one have to ask how many of them have really a saving of $1 million. But of course,
okay, Li- Li-
in the future.
Yeah, I understand. Later, yeah, exactly, because of MPF. Because of MPF, a lot of people will have a lump sum. Most people will.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
After the MPF kick in, of course, there will be more with $1 million. I think, you know, especially when the MPF have been running for, say, 30 or 40 years. We do not oppose having annuity so that, you know, the elderly had an option to choose so that they can have a stable income in the future. But what I want to point out, the objective of the whole scheme is also, you know, divert attention, if it is to divert attention from demand for universal pension. Then this is something that is not really comprehensive enough to help the people of Hong Kong. So what we believe is that it can be one, say, with the World Bank proposal for taking care of elderly retirement, you know, this can be one of the pillars, so-called, you know, using your saving and the provident fund to fund your own retirement life. But it cannot, replace the demand or the option or the choice or the responsibility, I would rather say, government.
I'm sorry to
sound universal pension.
Sorry to sound cynical, but this means you're actually supporting something the Hong Kong government has done. You're saying the annuity scheme is a good idea. I know you say that it shouldn't replace other things, but this in itself is a proposal you would support.
This proposal I would support because. Anyway, you know, if people have a choice, if you have $1 million, you can invest for yourself, of course,
right.
Or you can put into the annuity with a guaranteed income until your death. And if you die earlier, you know, the money will go to your family. So I think it really, in a way, helped the elderly in the sense that those with money, you know, that they can have. Some investment that can be guaranteed for return, and then, you know, put off the worry of the elderly, you know. In,
so it does, it does kind of prove, the government is kind of, you know, making a point here that they don't need a universal pension because they can buy themselves the same income stream with their capital, doesn't it? I mean, it's kind of underlines the point that that welfare should be for those who need it, not for those who can buy their own income streams with annuities.
As I said, you know, they are trying to do that in a way, I would say.
Well,
but
I'm making a valid point.
I don't think this can replace. You know, for example, you know, if you said that MPF, you know, as people kick in with MPF, then they can have 5,000 in the future. But not all people have MPF. You know, imagine those who, especially the women population, you know, they their continuity of employment is always broken. So that they cannot really have 40 years. They may have, you know, 10 years or 20 years of working life.
Which is why we have a means-tested elderly welfare system. And that's good, isn't it, that we have a means-tested elderly welfare system for those who don't have the savings. But you keep calling for a universal pension that people who have money don't actually need and would have to pay for through much higher taxes if those taxes could be collected.
No, I think, we want a decent retirement life for the elderly. And I think annuity is only one of them. You know, if you have an annuity, and not all of them have a million of MPF in a way. And secondly, you know, if you have annuity with 1 million or you have less, you know, 500,000, then it's a, you know, supplement to the universal pension. The universal pension, what we are talking about is only 3,500. So it's not really a big deal. And so if any elderly, including those, especially those without an MPF, then it really
isn't it interesting that actually, because the payout is so low on annuities because of low interest rates at the moment, it may be the case that people can bring themselves into the threshold, under the threshold for claiming welfare payments, if they give away their capital to the government to collect the annuity. If they're down to their last $1,050,000, say, and they put $1 million into an annuity, they're only going to have income of $5,800 and capital of $50,000 remaining. So doesn't that qualify them for old age living allowance?
Getting yourself ahead of yourself.
If they want to be qualified for old age allowance, then their annuity had to go, their assets, you know, from 1 million, it had to go down to, I think, at the present level that the government suggests, is, which is so mean in a way, is 140,000. So when they go down to 140,000, then they will be eligible for...
That's what I'm saying. Some people would actually put themselves into that situation by putting their last $1 million into an annuity and only having 140 left.
No, once you put into annuity, it's still your asset.
Yeah, you don't, so David Webb.
So that won't be, that'll still be counted.
You don't know how the rules will be written on this.
I think the whole purpose of government is so that, you know,
the other way is just give it to your children and then claim.
Unless they give it to the children, of course, then that will be another matter. But if you give it to the children, then you cannot join the annuity. So once you join the annuity, your asset will be still there, and unless you know, of course, it will diminish the assets. Diminished to the extent, I think, for your last 5 years or some, you know, 8 years, maybe then you would be eligible for some kind of welfare under the so-called elderly allowance scheme. And so I think what we're asking, of course, demanding is that, you know, a comprehensive one will be one that with, you know, universal pension plus MPF, and then, you know, people can decide how to use the MPF scheme.
Later again, do you think it would also be attractive? I think it's an interesting suggestion, actually. It hadn't really occurred to me. As a gift or whatever for parents, for dependent parents. That kind of seems to make sense, doesn't it? You'd set this up, say $1 million, up to $1 million, and then you kind of discharge your responsibilities, and the parents would have a sort of regular stream. That might be attractive in Hong Kong. Do you think?
Yeah, but I don't think so. You know, if people really have a 1 million that they can give to the parent, I think they would rather, you know, they take care of parents by themselves, you know, by investment them, investing themselves. And as I've said, you know, once you give 1 million to your parent in a way, your parent will not be eligible for elderly allowance because the elderly allowance accounts of asset or parent. Once you give them annuity, then they will be out of the whole. That will be the asset, and they cannot be eligible for anything.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it's going to be popular? Do you think it will be well received, Li Chiang Yan? Because this is only on a scale of, they said they could put, they can manage $10 billion, I think.
Is there only 10,000 people? If you're talking about the maximum of 1 million, it only 10,000 people so could subscribe.
I think, you know, it's only limited in a way, as you said, you know, only 10,000 people, and I think, you know, when they said that only you can join with a threshold only 50,000, I think that will be really not really very attractive. If you have 50,000 and you put in annuity and get $200-something a month, then I think that will be really not really very attractive. So it will be only attractive only to those who have really 1 million. And I think that is also at the moment is really very limited. People have 1 million. You know, I'm not saying that the elderly that aren't do not have saving. If they have saving, they may already put it in housing investment. So I think in the short term, I think it is only limited. But in the long run,
they've underpriced it, right?
Years,
They've underpriced it. The payout ratio is higher than in the private sector, so won't it be popular just for that reason? I mean, shouldn't I go around looking for healthy old people to sponsor and asking them to just give me the payments and I'll cut them in on 5% of it I'll advance the capital so that I can collect, you know, I can create a little REIT out of it.
It's highly possible, David Webb, that we'll find you've broken some law doing that.
Sponsor an old person. I think that sounds like a good thing.
More the point is the obligation to hand over the money back to you.
No, I'll give them 5% for free. No capital required. I'll collect the 95%, but I want healthy people who don't smoke because the government isn't going to pay you more if you're a smoker or or overweight or obviously likely to die soon. So, in fact, it's going to encourage adverse selection. The healthiest people who can perhaps afford good medical care because they're in the private sector, you know, they're going to say, well, sure, I'll put up 1 million for this. It's like a free ride. I'm going to live to 90 at least.
Li basically, again, you said this is kind of a distraction from the universal pension, but do you think it will work as a distraction? Do you think people will say, yeah, well, we've got this, maybe it's not so important to have the universal pension?
No, I don't think it would be a distraction. The distraction would not work, but they would try to explain it that way. Because, as I've said, you know, it would only work after, you know, 40 years of MPF kick in. Now it's only kick in 20 years. And after 40 years, then there may be more people with 1 million. But now, at the moment, I don't think there are many people with 1 million and to invest into it. So it was not popular in the first, when it launched. I think it would be better after some years. And also, you know, the elderly poverty problem cannot be solved. Everyone understands that. If you, it cannot be solved by helping those with $1 million. So I think the push for universal pension will still be there and the pressure will still be there.
Okay. We'll say goodbye to Ali Chitgan for the moment. We're going to continue the discussion after the news at 9 in just a few minutes' time. Paul Yip and Nick Chan will be joining us then. Drop us a line, backchat@rthk.hk. Later, also going to talk about Carrie Lam in Beijing, getting her job well done certificate and so on. The weather before the news now is going to be cloudy to overcast today with occasional showers and one or two thunderstorms as well. Temperatures lingering around 20 degrees during the day, moderate to fresh north to northeasterly winds. The outlook, still some rain tomorrow, and then the weather improving gradually during the Easter holiday. 20 degrees now, humidity 92%. Welcome back. This is Back Chat on a Wednesday morning with Danny Gittings, because Friday is a holiday for a change. And we're talking about the government's annuity plan introduced by the Hong Kong Mortgage Corporation earlier this week. We're talking about the pros and cons, the rights and wrongs. We have with us David Webb, shareholder activist, founder of website.com. Mopak Hong, associate professor in the Department of Economics and the School of Business at the Baptist University. We're also joined now by Professor Paul Yip from the Department of Social Work and Social Administration at the University of Hong Kong. Later, we're also going to be talking about Carrie Lam's time in Beijing and what we learn from that. If you want to comment, we welcome your emails, backchat@rthk.hk. We'll read them out. We can go to our Facebook page and comment there. Comment there. That's Backchat on RTHK Radio 3. Or you can just call us on 233-882-66. A few emails which have questions about the scheme. Perhaps if any of our guests can answer those, they could step forward. If not, I will do my best from what I know. For example, Fiona says, my first question is why the investment is offered by the Mortgage Corporation, which is mandated to help people buy properties. Have they revised their mandate, or is it a solution to release the pressure of too much assets being helped by the Hong Kong government, or a wishy-washy answer to the call for more welfare for the elderly? Insurance products for insurers are backed up by teams of actuaries who do calculations in view of moving assets. How does the Mortgage Corporation come up with the rate of return? The more I read it, the more I don't think it is a sensible investment for the elderly. That comes from Fiona. On the involvement of the Mortgage Corporation, I can just quote to you what they say in their the government press release, which says that the Mortgage Corporation is a wholly owned subsidiary of the Exchange Fund. Since its inception, it's been operating prudently, has contributed significantly to the areas of mortgage securitization, debt market development, and mortgage insurance. Recently, the Mortgage Corporation launched the market-based reverse mortgage program to meet the needs of retiring Hong Kong people so they can better enjoy the rest of their lives. The life annuity scheme is another brand new market-based product. That's how the Mortgage Corporation see their role and their part in this. This is a comment from Don, who says, can you kindly ask your guests if they have the following information? One, is this only available to legal residents currently residing full-time in Hong Kong? What about Hong Kong citizens who may not be residing full-time in Hong Kong? In essence, is there a residency requirement? As far as I know, that hasn't come up. But hasn't
yes, been they've been, we were discussing this earlier. They've been very careful not to reveal too many details at this stage, and they're presumably, just David Webb, just very briefly, presumably there are legal issues, aren't there, if you start revealing details about a financial product before it's fully launched?
Your correspondents have a point, which is that the government shouldn't be intervening in this space. If mortgage corporation calls something market based, that doesn't make it market based. The mortgage corporation has a AAA credit rating precisely because it's owned by the government and they can backstop it indefinitely, and that's why it's able to compete unfairly with the private sector. They have deviated from their original mission, which was wrong-headed in the first place. They were set up in the 1990s to buy portfolios of mortgages from banks so that banks could lend more money on mortgages. It's kind of like Fannie Mae and in the US, the two mortgage corporations there, got into big difficulties. They have shrunk back from that role because of the higher risks involved in insuring second mortgages up to 90% loan ratios on overvalued properties. So basically in the last few years, they've reduced that down to a small amount. You can't get a second mortgage from the mortgage corporation I think it's about 6 million Hong Kong of property value now. The government, rather than actually put this thing to sleep or sell it off in a privatization if they think it has some value, which they could just list the mortgage corporation and have it wholly owned by the public. Instead, they've tried to find new roles for it, such as microfinance. Did you know they had a microfinance scheme? Because apparently you can't find money to borrow from the private sector in Hong Kong from loan companies. So the government needs to intervene and do this as well. And on the reverse mortgages, that is actually has a kind of embedded annuity in it because it gives you a regular payment for the rest of your life while you remain in your home. So it's they've already been experimenting with that, but there's not been a lot of success. They've so far, I looked at the figures yesterday, they've sold 1,780, I think, since they launched the scheme of reverse mortgages. So there's perhaps a warning sign that even though they've underpriced this product, it won't be that popular.
One more comment from Don also in the email, who says, what if the purchaser of the annuity wants out after 10 years? Can she forego future annuity dividends and get back the principal? Is something like the call feature of a bond?
Well, you can, that is covered, yes.
You can get the money back.
They've already made clear that you can.
You can get the remainder of the money back without interest on it. I mean, you're only going to get back eventually the 105% that you've put in over 15 years. If you want it faster, then there'll be a discount on that.
But basically, you can get your money back. Also, he says 3% yield internal rate of return is exceptionally good, considering today's U.S. Treasury bond with 30-year maturity only yields 2.97%. Add the fact that Hong Kong dollar is pegged to the U.S. dollar, this is better than buying a Treasury, except there's no 30-year maturity. Thanks. Okay.
Well, that calculation assumes you live well beyond the first 15 years because the internal rate of return is their internal rate on the average expectancy of life. So
there's also an uncertainty over the management fees because some reports say that the government is going to waive the management fees, but others. But I can't see that in their initial press release.
It's not an investment product like that. It's a fixed payout, so there's no management fee involved. They take the money that you pay in and they basically put it into the exchange fund or a very similar portfolio.
Right. So, and another question also about inflation, whether it's inflation linked, but it's not. There's no suggestion of that. Okay. Well,
and that's the bad thing. I mean, I think that's going to turn off a lot of people if you say, well, you know, I'm still only going to get $5,800 15 years from now. What will that really buy me?
Professor Paul Yip, good morning to you.
Yes. Good morning.
What do you make of this? What do you make of this plan? Do you think it's is it kind of a distraction from the idea of a universal pension? Is it would it work as a distraction from a universal pension?
Yes. Well, I think some of the speakers this morning already mentioned that obviously this is a form of distraction for the government to do in order to divert the public's attention away from universal pension, because in the last 3 years, the government has already conducted two independent studies, both of which conclude that the majority of the Hong Kong people are in favor of universal pension. Now, Leung Chun Ying yesterday mentioned that he really cares about the livelihood of the elderly. But then, 5 years ago, during his election campaign, he promised that he will implement universal pension. So basically, we think that the government is just trying to run away from this important pledge. And we think the government is just really being very irresponsible.
Okay, on that theme, let's also bring in a second guest who's on the line, Nick Chan, organiser of the Alliance for Universal Pension. Mr. Chan, good morning.
Yes, good morning.
I think you're actually participating in a protest this morning.
Yes, that's right. Actually, today the NEGCO is going to rectify the funding for this year's government. So we're here to stage a protest to ask for universal pension. Actually, the government 2 years ago during the government financial report, the government has already promised to allocate $50 billion for a retirement protection. But now they've decided to use the $50 billion for the MPF offset and for the newly proposed higher old age allowance income for the elderly. And we are really opposed to this idea. Basically, we think the government is really trying to chicken out on their promise to implement universal pension, and this is just very unacceptable.
How about the annuity? Are you actually opposed to that because you worry that they will use it as an alternative to universal pension, or you just want this plus universal pension?
Yeah, I mean, just like some of the speakers talked about this morning, we think the annuity plan is already something that is available on the private market. And this is something that should be dealt with by the private sector. We really don't understand why the government has decided to join this program and to come up with this. It is much, much way better for the government to focus their attention on the implementation of universal pension.
But this product is a better product. It's better for the consumer. You know, isn't it good for the government to be offering something which is more convenient and pays more than you can find in the market? That's a good thing, isn't it? Good thing for the government to do.
Well, we think actually we have all the faith in the private market. So, but the thing that we don't understand is why actually at this moment when everyone is asking for universal pension, that the government has come up with something like this on their own. And let's remember that the government will not guarantee the return of this annuity plan. The government will not guarantee any return. So basically, they are asking people with their lifetime savings. For some private products that does not guarantee any return.
I thought that was kind of the point, that they would guarantee it.
No. What the government is doing right now is they are allocating $10 billion as a kickstart so that there is enough return at the beginning.
That's wrong. They're not putting $10 billion into it at all. The people who buy the annuities are putting $10 billion into it if they buy them.
I think the $10 billion is just, they said they won't manage more than $10 billion.
Yes.
Is that right?
That's, and in fact, they will probably increase it if it's popular. But, you know, that's to be seen. And they might increase the $1 million per person allowance. So you could buy yourself, you know, $10,000 a month rather than $5,800. But that's... it's not to the case that government money is needed for this.
Let's bring Mopak Hong back in the discussion. Mopak Hong, you had some ideas. there's only $10 billion available and it may be oversubscribed. You had some ideas about how this should be allocated.
I think the product provided by the government is, our power is much better than those in the private sector, in the market. So therefore, oversubscription is very likely.
And if that happens, who should get first priority?
And if the government provide unlimited quota on such product, then probably the private market will just be cloud over and eliminated. So I think the product should be somehow limited to those government decide wanted to support, just like those retirees from the MPF fund. They can have choice to...
MPF retirees should have priority.
Should have the priority.
So it almost becomes an extension of the MPF, or an optional extension of MPF.
Yeah, give them a good option. And probably that's the most vulnerable part of the population need to be supported by such scheme. Because probably for those who can take care of themselves, knowledgeable to get much higher return than the market or than the government provided, they don't need to scheme anymore anyway. So just for those middle or lower income middle classes, they are the most group of the people that, who need such product. And as I think priority is necessary because the product is much better than the market.
If you underprice something and have a limited quota, you're going to have excess demand. And so you can see the sort of, you know, lottery coming on here. It's going to be like applying for home ownership scheme units that, you know, there's far more demand than there is supply.
Very likely.
Either that or they open the floodgates and crowd out the private sector, as you say.
Are we really going to be so sad they crowd out? Maybe I'll bring in
I've never been a fan of the way the life insurer
let me read a comment from our Facebook page, which actually addresses this. There's annuity products offered by insurance companies are no match. They have to make a profit and they pay commission 35 to 60% of the premium received to the agent, whereas Hong Kong Mortgage Corporation has no such consideration, making it possible for annuity buyers to have a better deal. The scheme would appeal to those who need a monthly distribution scheme or could not accept low-risk investments like utility stocks or tracker funds or the dismal return from bank deposits. This market niche is not small as aversion to risk increases as people age and the number of elderly citizens could only increase. This is from Henry on our Facebook page. How about that point? David Webb, you're not going to shed any tears for these insurance agents who are taking 35% or so of the money you hand over.
It is a very inefficient distribution system for financial products. And by the way, those commissions come out of the first.
We might even call a market failure. I mean,
I think that there's those commissions, by the way, come out of the first year's premiums over a long-term contract. So it's skewed. It's not the case that 35% of all your payments will go to the agent.
Still sounds pretty bad.
But you are much better off buying, if you don't know what stocks to buy, just buy a certain amount of the tracker fund of Hong Kong, which only charges 0.1% per year on your money. And it'll cost you maybe 0.2% brokerage fee to buy it, and you won't be charged stamp duty anymore by the government. And you can buy a quantity of that. And if you want to balance your risk, put another quantity into revolving time deposits at your bank at 3 months or 6 months or whatever maturity you think is right. So you can mix risk-free products because the banks have some kind of government backstop to them. You can mix that with equities and get yourself the same efficiencies that the exchange fund has in managing your money. The only thing you can't do that way is buy life insurance because you're actually buying longevity insurance when you buy an annuity product. You still need to find an underwriter for that part of your risk or just be willing to run out of money at some point and claim on the public support system.
But Paul Yip, I was interested to hear Nelson Chow defending this annuity scheme. He's been the champion, obviously the champion of a universal pension. He seems to see this as a useful extra product that's available on the market. Could you not share his kind of optimism?
Well, I think the important thing is to provide sufficient protection for our older adults. I think what the proposed scheme now is to really giving a choice, I think to the people. And I hope those people who are fighting for the universal pension, I think if they can be a bit more open-minded, I think if we can identify, I think, 20% or 30% of those people who can make use of this product and such that they can have a retirement protection, and that 30% of the resources can be redeployed, I mean, to help those people who are really in need. I think what we have been talking about, that if you give the money to everybody and actually, I think, you're just thinning out the services. I think if we can make the support, I think to be a more focused group, I think these people, they could enjoy a bit more. So I think this product itself, I mean, from our thinking, I think in the coming cohort, I think the soon-to-be old these adults, I think they would financially be better off than the present cohort. So I think this product itself, I think should be a choice, I think, to the Hong Kong community and how we really can spread out the protection among for the all the elderly in our community.
And you're going to you say we need more products, the different products that, I mean, I know you're pressing for a universal pension scheme, but the problem of an aging population has to be dealt with through multiple channels.
Yes, sure. I think what the problem now is there are a lot of people, they like to use one way to solve all the problem. But I think what we are should develop is a multiple pathway, I think, to deal with the elderly, this retirement protection. And I think this annuity product itself is actually, I think, in our elderly population, there are a certain proportion of people, they do not need to go for the government support. And if we can come up with a product which they can provide their own money and such that they can ensure they have this sort of protection, and that would be good, I think, for the whole community.
Do you think, could you apply some of these lessons to the MPF? What if the Mortgage Corporation ran the MPF, for example, and you stopped it being done by the private industry?
Well, I think what the government is doing now, I think they are underwriting the whole scheme. I think the expected return is also higher than the private market. So I think there is some sort of financial obligation here. I'm not sure how much the government can expand to cater for everybody. But I think at present, I think on this aspect, at least I think they can start, I think, to do something, I think, to help the elderly. And part of the way, I mean, is a practical way, I think, to create a universal retirement protection, I think, to the community.
Yeah, the danger with centralized retirement management, as Singapore has and Korea has, is you might end up with a situation like Korea where the government controls so much money on behalf of the public and owns such large percentages of listed companies that it starts to meddle in their affairs, as the Korean government did in Samsung's case, and eventually brought down the president. So, you know, it's much better in principle for people to manage their money privately or have people manage it privately for them. The MPF currently doesn't allow the option of self-management of your MPF money. It should. It should allow you to say, I don't want to pay a fund manager. This scheme wasn't set up for their benefit. It was set up for mine. And if you're going to make me pay into it, then I'd like to manage my own investments. Give people that choice. And then they could choose to buy time deposits, tracker funds, or whatever it is that they want under the locked-in portion of their savings in the MPF.
That's an interesting discussion for another day.
Yeah. Well, in the meantime, David Webb, thank you very much indeed for joining us. Thank you to Professor Paul Yip from the University of Hong Kong, to Nick Chan, organiser of the Alliance for Universal Pension, and Mo Pak Hong, thank you very much indeed. Professor Mo, Associate Professor from Baptist University in the Department of Economics and in the School of Business. Thank you all very much indeed.